Hi, you're listening to Pharmacy Focus Oncology Edition, where we bring you the latest trends in the oncology pharmacy space. I'm your host, Alex Gerlach, and I couldn't be more excited about today's episode. It's been a long time in the making, but I couldn't be more grateful that we were able to pull it all together. Today, I'm joined by multiple experts from the University of Kentucky to help me explore a crucial but often overlooked topic, radon-induced lung cancer. In this episode, we'll look at radon from multiple perspectives, talk a little bit about science, statistics, policy, the geology, but most importantly, its impact on health. We have a lot to cover today, so I encourage you to settle in, get comfortable, and join us for this very important conversation. Hey everyone, thanks so much for joining me today. I'm really excited to kick off our conversation. So we're going to start nice and simple and just do some introductions around the room.
So my name is Donna Robinson. I am a geologist and GIS analyst with the Kentucky Geological Survey here at the University of Kentucky. I work on the landscape evolution and mapping team as well as the geohealth team, where I'm mostly focusing on radon. I'm also a PhD student within the Department of Earth and Environmental Sciences at UK, researching geologic pathways for radon in Kentucky.
Hi, I'm Jane Malone. I'm the National Policy Director for the Indoor Environments Association, which was originally called and is also legally the name of our organization, is the American Association of Radon Scientists and Technologists. And what I do as a policy director is help support our members, our chapters, others to enact state policy and actually also to cover this issue at the federal level with Congress and with the executive branch.
Well, hello, I'm Tim Mullett. I'm a thoracic surgeon here at the University of Kentucky, been involved in lung cancer surgery and care of patients with lung cancer for over 30 years. And it's been a privilege to be here in Kentucky and to try to have some influences on aspects of lung cancer, now working on lung cancer screening, also working on enhancing the availability and the awareness about molecular testing about lung cancer. And as we're seeing a decline in tobacco use across the country, we're really interested in making sure that people are aware of radon being an issue. So this is a privilege for me to be here and to help talk about this topic and bring some more visibility to something that's really important.
Yeah, thank you, Alex. I'm Stacey Stanifer. I am an assistant professor at the University of Kentucky College of Nursing, and my background is as an oncology clinical nurse specialist. I do a lot of teaching within the college, but primarily also work on research, and my area of research is at the intersection of the environment and cancer. So I'm working within the community to try to increase awareness and access to radon testing and mitigation. And thank you for having me.
Thank you all for joining and for these brief introductions. I'm really excited to have the opportunity to really dive into this topic and really use your expertise, all of your expertise, to support the discussion we're having today. So before we jump into radon specifically, let's just kind of set the stage for what lung cancer looks like right now. It's one of the most common and well-known cancer amongst everyday people. So Dr. Mullett, Stacey, maybe you can shed some light on the prevalence of lung cancer and kind of what it looks like on the ground right now.
Sure. Well, lung cancer is unfortunately the most common cancer killer. It's responsible for more cancer deaths than breast cancer, prostate cancer, colon cancer combined. And so, and most of that has been due to a late stage diagnosis where we've been finding this cancer late. And so we've been seeing an improvement in early stage diagnosis in areas that have effectively implemented lung cancer screening, which has been around for approved for about 10 years now. And so we are anxious to see this really take hold and have an impact. But lung cancer remains the second most common cancer that we have in the country. And it is one that is primarily linked to tobacco use. And so when we see heavy tobacco use, we'll see an increased risk of lung cancer. And so our best defense against lung cancer is to really prevent tobacco use. And what can we do to reduce that risk by helping people not start smoking, or if they are smoking, to quit? And so we're excited to see that nationally and even in Kentucky, we're seeing a decline in lung cancer rates by a decline in tobacco use. And so that leaves, while 85% or so of cancers are caused by, or at least certainly related to, tobacco use, unfortunately, we're seeing an increase in those cancers that are not related to tobacco use. And so radon being the leading cause of those cancers that are not related to tobacco. And so we can continue to have an impact on lung cancer if we can identify high-risk radon areas, test for this in your homes, and ultimately be able to mitigate that risk. Stacy?
Yeah, I think Dr. Mollett covered that really well. In Kentucky, we do have kind of a triple threat where we have folks who are exposed to tobacco as secondhand smoke and a large area as a large across Kentucky, I guess. And then we have folks who are continue to use tobacco, although it is great that we're seeing declines. We also know there's a large population who's being exposed to radon in the state of Kentucky, and that extends beyond Kentucky's borders too. But Kentucky specifically, we have a large percentage of counties that, according to the EPA radon zone map, have moderate to high radon risk potential, and very few homes have actually tested for radon in our state. And so we would love to see, you know, we're working together to try to continue to decrease tobacco use, get folks to never initiate tobacco use so they don't have to face, you know, that addiction that can come with it. And then also getting folks to test their home for radon and fix when they have high levels. We also know science has told us too, there's a synergism between tobacco and radon. So when you are exposed to both tobacco and radon, there's an increased risk associated with that. And so there's many folks around our state because of the prevalence of tobacco use and the lack of radon testing and the high potential. We really have kind of been this perfect storm for an overrepresentation of cases in our state.
Great. So you both have kind of alluded to, obviously, radon as this growing issue. Donna, so maybe we can move into now, what is radon? Where does it come from? Where is it found? And why is it so dangerous?
Sure. So radon gas is a colorless, odorless, tasteless, and invisible radionuclide, meaning it's radioactive. So it exists through the natural radioactive decay of uranium and thorium, which is found in all rocks and soils. So these elements were actually formed by cosmic supernova explosions pretty much billions and billions of years ago, and were eventually incorporated into the Earth as it formed. And today they continue to generate heat deep within the planet, as well as exist in lower concentrations pretty much everywhere in the upper crust. So we consider them to be ubiquitous. And because they're ubiquitous, so too is radon. So in Kentucky, radon exists basically everywhere, just like anywhere else on the crust in any country, pretty much. But Kentucky has a special component where we have a lot of karst and limestone. And there have been recent studies that show indoor radon tends to be higher above limestone lithology, most likely because it is more porous and allows for those gases to kind of creep their way into homes and other structures through those cracks and imperfections in the foundation, where those gases have that pathway to that indoor environment. And even depending on the season, And the atmospheric conditions, these gases can actually be sucked into homes and buildings actively due to those pressure differences between the inside and outside air. So we're really trying to understand those exact pathways and what really is the multiple driving factors, because we know geology plays a role. We know seasonality probably plays a role. We're really trying to get a good sense of all of those factors working together, and that's part of what my research is focusing on.
Yeah, I just want to jump in on, the kind of widespread nature of radon. The CDC, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's Environmental Public Health Tracking Network, maintains a database that has radon tests from all over the country. And in that database, we find that only 13% of U.S. counties had no radon tests greater than or equal to 4, okay? So that's the overwhelming majority of counties in the U.S. having high radon levels. And of the ones that don't have them, don't have a high radon level anywhere in the county, basically most of those counties, no testing whatsoever has been performed. And one of the reasons is because those are counties that were identified in 1993 as low risk in the EPA radon maps. So just to be clear, the EPA radon map was a fine thing at the time, but in the intervening 30 years, when we've collected more tests, we basically, if we keep looking for radon, we're gonna find it. And so one of the tragedies is, of course, that people didn't test in the counties that were misclassified as low risk. So I just wanted to make that point about prevalence.
When you think about widespread prevalence of, we're speaking specifically about radon, but, even thinking about what's going on in like the Midwest, you have a lot of cases of lymphoma and different blood cancers, because out there it's a lot of farmland and those farmers are exposed to a lot of different pesticides. These are giant farms. These are cornfields and soybean farms. So there's a lot of, there's a lot more going on in the way of regulations and pesticide use that is going to increase their risk. So, I'm sure that we see with areas in the country that have high radon, we're probably also seeing higher, kind of collections or clusters of people that have lung cancer.
That's right. I think Jane raised a really good point. Just because, some areas have, like, especially high levels doesn't mean everywhere else has low levels. So it just really depends on a lot of factors.
So radon, radioactive, super dangerous, especially particularly at really high levels. But how does it relate to lung cancer development? So Dr. Mullet, Stacy, is there an underlying biology or mechanism that you can speak to that, drives lung cancer development alongside or due to exposure to radon?
There he is. I just wanted to add one thing to your comment about understanding radon's everywhere. And you said something interesting, radon's super dangerous. And I think that's a really important message here, but it's really something that people have a hard time acknowledging this because, we all have fire extinguishers in our home. We all have smoke detectors in our home. We have carbon monoxide detectors. We know about these, and these are immediate risks. And we respond very quickly to fire, carbon monoxide levels that are high in the home, things that are dangerous. But radon is insidious, and it creeps in as described, and it can be in even high levels. And because, as Donna said, odorless, tasteless, we don't see it, we don't smell it, we don't know it's there, and it doesn't kill immediately, and so it's something that can be present. And I've known patients who have had their homes tested. They've been very high for radon. They know they're at high risk and have had lung cancers that have been identified associated with that. And so, but it doesn't happen right away. Even with tobacco use, there's a 20-year lag between the peak use of tobacco and when we see lung cancer risk rise. And so it's this disconnect that actually happens in people that are not seeing the risk. And so I think that that's just an important way to think about radon, that it is dangerous. It is there are risk factors, there are risks involved with radon exposure. It just doesn't happen right away. It may not even be in the home that you live in right now, but you were exposed to when you were growing up or otherwise. And so this is why it's so important for us to get this testing message out. As far as lung cancer is concerned, the group has said it well. Radon is a radioactive element that is present as a gas, and this functions as a small particle that gets inhaled. And once that goes into the lung, then it deposits onto the wet mucous membranes of the lung, and it's sitting there emitting its a little bit of radiation. But it does so over a long period of time as it decays. And so those radioactive forces ultimately can cause damage to DNA, the actual genetic code that we have, and those breaks in the DNA can ultimately lead to mutations, changes in the DNA, and can release the inhibitions that our body's cells have to grow. And they can grow faster ultimately pile up and grow into a tumor. And that tumor will continue to get larger. By then, the effect of radon has already had its influence. And so the tumor is caused. It may take years for that to ultimately become something that can even be seen on a CT scan. And so ultimately that tumor will grow and then spread. And that's when we usually find the cancer, at least historically. That's how we have found these cancers in late stages. But I think there are opportunities for us to find it early in the patients that have very high risk, such as high use of tobacco and the right age. So if you're a tobacco user between 50 and 80, you certainly should talk to your doctor about lung cancer screening. And radon should be a conversation that you have about whether you've ever been tested, whether your home's ever been tested, whether your workplace or your school has been tested. These things should be part of the conversation that we talk to patients about, frankly, all the time.
Yeah, thank you. I also, just to add to that, when we think about the dual exposure to radon and tobacco use being synergistic, we think, you know, radon by itself is a risk factor for lung cancer. And it was told a long time ago that every home should be tested for radon. What we know in Kentucky is only about 13 out of every 10,000 homes are testing annually in Kentucky. So we have a lot of work to do. But when you can imagine being exposed to two carcinogens at the same time, it certainly increases the risk of developing lung cancer. You know, everyone, regardless of whether or not you're exposed to tobacco, we should be testing our homes for radon. And I think we have a lot of opportunities, policy opportunities. I'm sure Jane will touch on these for ways that we can address both radon exposure and tobacco exposure, and even thinking about exposure in children. So daycares, schools, and then, of course, in homes where young children are. As Dr. Mollett mentioned, being exposed as a child can really set you up in the years to come for developing lung cancer later on in life.
And we know that that's the case with a lot of other cancers as well. These mutations, they, you know, occur over a long period of time. My father has multiple myeloma, and, you know, for 30 years, he was accumulating these genetic mutations. So that's where I think, you know, speaking to the importance of screening and implementing policy that will ensure that people's homes are getting tested. So Jane, now I think we can move into talking a bit about policy. So we're seeing this issue persist. What protections currently exist around radon, either specifically in Kentucky in your region, or if there's anything on a national or regional scale that you see happening? What is the policy landscape looking like right now?
Yeah. Well, what I know about what's going on in Kentucky is that there is a requirement that people performing radon services, namely measurement to test homes and mitigation to fix the problem. Those folks are regulated in Kentucky, meaning a credential is required and they have to follow nationally recognized consensus standards. And that's a really important foundational policy. We only have 20 states in the US that require credentials for doing radon work. So in the other 30 states, unfortunately, you know, anyone can come along and knock on a door and say, hey, let me test your home or can I mitigate for you? Not a good thing. But I do want to say that our association and allies like the American Lung Association are really pushing for more, you know, credentialing requirements in more states. This is radioactivity, you know, and we regulate all kinds of other really important professions. It's really crucial that we protect the public by regulating. And secondly, there are what I want to call the, you know, there's a continuum of occupant protections, right, that are possible with regard to radon. First of all, and like really low level, is that when people are considering buying or renting a home, that prospective buyer or tenant be informed about the possibility of radon. Because when people are resituating themselves and those kinds of transitions, that's the time they think about, what do I want for myself and my family and my home environment? And so a crucial type of policy, and a version of this exists in Kentucky for home buyers. A crucial component is that those persons be warned about the possibility of radon and encouraged to test. And now there are a few places in the country, very, very few, where a testing is required in rental situations only. I mean, I could count them on one hand, localities, no states have such requirements. We would certainly love to see more universal testing requirements throughout the country, but we're not there yet. So that these warning policies for people, at least when they're buying or leasing for the first time, that they test, that's a good substitute for the testing requirement, although we'd really rather see that. And then secondly, there's things like, you know, testing in schools and childcare facilities, not so much other workplaces yet. We've got 17 states that have some kind of requirement for school testing. Few of them actually require mitigation, but at least testing is required and the parents are informed. And, you know, basically the public is informed about the need to mitigate in those school buildings. And then another big area of policy, a real prevention move here, is requiring that new homes be built with radon control. It is much cheaper to build in radon upfront into the foundation of that home than to mitigate later. And it just, you know, it's easier to do the right things in terms of sealing and creating the pipe system needed to push radon out the roof. And another area is subsidizing mitigation for those who cannot afford it. There's very little going on in that area. There's one state that has it. There's another state that Iowa has proposed a tax credit for when someone gets radon work done in their home. And also, I mean, engineering interventions and, you know, fixing homes is all very important. But going back to the prevention piece, you know, screening for lung cancer, people haven't yet figured out how and why, you know, exactly how to do this, rather what's the right way to do it. But somehow factoring in environmental risk factors into screening decisions is another important area. You know, it's great that we've got the requirement, I think it's only 10 years old, for screening, requiring that the insurers pay for people receive screening if they have been, you know, interacted with tobacco. But if we can expand that somewhat to start to really look at environmental exposures, that would be another way to catch cancer earlier than we're doing now with radon-induced lung cancer. There are 21,000 lung cancer deaths a year, radon-induced lung cancer deaths, according to a study that was done in 2001 or 2003. And here we are, two decades later, you know, the population and the housing stock both grown by more than 15%. A lot of those new homes not only didn't have radon control put into them, but also they were built with, you know, greater energy conservation requirements, which makes a tighter home, which saves energy costs, which is really good. But from a health perspective, radon perspective, that, you know, increasing building tightness increases risk as well. So it's not a bad thing, but we need to figure out how to accomplish energy efficiency and protection from radon at the same time in these new homes as we build them.
Yeah. So actually something I'm a little curious about. So you mentioned the EPA, and right now, you know, we've seen a lot of defunding happening, and they've been forced to. I've actually been writing about this quite often. Stacey, I'm also interested in the intersection between health and the environment. So I've recently written about the EPA regulations that have since been removed or pulled. Do you think that that is also going to have an impact on radon? Maybe not necessarily policy, but would that impact the EPA's ability to track radon?
Well, yeah, that there's multiple facets to what you just asked about. So first of all, yeah. EPA, this is really current events, right? The president's budget proposed to eliminate both the state indoor radon grants, which are crucial powerhouses for state health departments, environmental agencies, et cetera, to operate programs to really promote prevention, promote testing, and also promote policy change. Fortunately, both the House and the Senate disagree and put funding for those programs in their respective appropriations bills. Not so much for the EPA radon program. There's a core staff at the regional level and at headquarters that has been, you know, doing this science and tracking and, you know, promoting, writing promotional materials, playing all kinds of roles to keep radon visible and in the forefront as much as possible and can do from a federal agency perspective, but also supporting infrastructure like certification and standards. That program was zeroed out in the president's budget, and the House, but the House proposal so far doesn't refund it. The Senate is refunding it, but it's all very tricky. So anybody's listening to this podcast in the near term, please feel free to contact your two senators and your House member to say we need full funding for both EPA radon programs. CDC's Environmental Public Health Tracking Program was actually suspended. The folks were put on administrative leave in March, and they've been allowed to return to work, but they haven't yet started any work again on that also important data set. So we're very concerned about that. And in addition, we've seen a rollback of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac policy, which basically Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are house or mortgage insurers that provide funding for multifamily loans all across the country. And up until a couple months ago, they were requiring radon testing, you know, fully according to voluntary consensus standards. That means that, you know, every year, you know, 10,000 properties, you know, hundreds of thousands of people were being protected by proper testing for radon in those buildings that were being supported by loans through Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae. That's been suspended. So we're working hard to get that policy restored, but it's a long road to hoe. In the meantime, you know, EPA continues to do what they need to do, and hopefully they'll be around helping us in the future. And hopefully those state grants will continue into the coming year.
We've covered a lot, but is there anything actionable that each of you think the audience can take away to really start to better address this issue of radon and lung cancer?
Well, I'll start with saying that we have a real, I think it's a real moment that we have with lung cancer right now. We've seen changes on earlier detection with lung cancer screening. We've seen better outcomes, even in late stage patients, due to more effective treatments. And so I think we have, this is a very different landscape than what we were looking at 20, 30 years ago. This is not your grandfather's lung cancer. This is a very different phenomenon where we have a real opportunity to enhance lung cancer screening. Unfortunately, we're not using it as much as we should. Everybody in this country knows what a mammogram is and what it's for, even though only 50% of the population really need that. And so I think that there's a real need for us to increase awareness of lung cancer screening. And the more that we can raise awareness on lung cancer screening and normalize the conversation, the more that we can bring radon into that conversation. I think even in our research that we're doing with lung cancer screening, we link radon awareness and discussions about radon into what we consider a most effective lung cancer screening program because of that dual nature that Stacy talked about, the dual hit of adding tobacco and adding radon risk. The patients are very high risk of lung cancer. So we want people to be testing for radon, even if they quit smoking. We really want to just raise the normality of getting their homes tested. And I think that this is the message that we really want to get out is that this is just as important as your smoke detector. Getting your home tested is something that you need to do, and you can reduce your own risk, your children's risk, and perhaps the person who's buying your house next if you go ahead and raise this awareness and get your home tested.
Yeah, I think my takeaway, we know folks who have tested their own home and know how easy it really is to test. They recommend it to other folks too. So if any of your listeners right now have never tested their home for radon, I would really encourage them to just take the time to locate a test kit and test their own home, and then, you know, tell other people how easy it is and encourage them to do so as well. We can think about a lot of pharmacists now are involved in tobacco treatment, just considering ways that we can incorporate the message in those areas. And maybe you work in a retail pharmacy as well, and you can think about, you know, maybe you could offer have test kits available at the retail pharmacy. So people come in to pick up their blood pressure medicine and they leave with their medicine as well as a test kit. And that's how we can try to normalize this prevention and really get the word out across the country and make it easy for folks to make that decision to test their own home. But I think my takeaway today would really just be, if you have never tested your home for radon, to go ahead and do that and take that step now for yourself, for your health, for the health of those living in your home, and then share that with others.
Stacy, I've been driving down my street in the neighborhood, and I see houses that have the pipes that are going on and they're for radon mitigation. So I've tested my house, and four times I've tested my house and it's been negative every time. And I'm saying, okay, well, but it's a good thing, you know, that these, and I think to Donna's point, this is something that it can be hit or miss. And there must be high levels of radon in the region. These homes are being tested and some other homes are positive. Maybe my windows are just leaky enough that I'm not getting enough accumulation.
Absolutely. And I tested my own home and it did test high. And this was a home that we have, we moved into, we have young children in the home, and this was a choice that I made for my family's health. You know, we made a conscious decision that I've to never use tobacco for the lung cancer risk. And so I wouldn't want to expose my children or my husband and I to anything that would raise our risk of developing lung cancer in the future as well. So we mitigated. For us, that was a simple choice and gave me a lot of peace of mind in living in this home and raising a family here.
So just reinforcing the importance of testing, you know, two homes right next door to each other can have radically different radon levels. Two apartments in the same apartment building can have radically different high radon levels, because radon as a gas is opportunistic. It moves in its own way through its own pathway. So just reinforcing Dr. Mullet's point, everybody needs to test and not just make an assumption based on a neighbor's test result. Donna, did you?
Yeah, that's right. Something I've definitely noticed with my field work, which was been being undertaken over the past several months, just going across the state and taking soil measurements, is that you really have no idea what the value is going to be until you measure it. So this goes especially for indoor. It can change. It can be low one week. It can be really high another one. The best course is really to get a long-term average and go off of that. While those 2-3 day tests are useful to get, you know, a single point, you really want to try to get a more long-term test running so you really know how the conditions are affecting your indoor levels. So I think that really just speaks to the need for better both soil testing and indoor testing across the state, so we can figure out kind of what we're dealing with and how to maybe better understand where we can expect higher levels down the road.
And what does, just maybe would be helpful for our audience to know, what does a home radon test look like?
So I think, if I'm not mistaken, one of the most common ones is like an activated charcoal test, which I think takes a few days to a week, and you hang it up and just let it kind of passively take in radiation, and then you send it off to a lab and they send you the results. Is that accurate?
So there's different kinds. I mean, I think just to give a sense of what it looks like, it can be like a card about the size of an index card, or it can be a plastic disc about the size of, you know, a lemon maybe. There's several different kinds of test kits that provide that short-term result. And yeah, you send it off to a lab and it's very important to follow the instructions around where you put the test before you mail it off for analysis. And important not to let it sit around for a long time. Some of these tests, the radon level will be wrong if it sits around too long before you get it in the mail back to the lab.
Alex, I'll add with the testing for listeners. The charcoal-based test kits, in some cases, you can get them from free from health departments in states that have that funding from the EPA. Otherwise, they're relatively inexpensive. They cost anywhere from about $10 to $15 for the charcoal-based test kits. And those are short-term test kits that you'd place in your home from about 3 to 7 days. If you wanted to test for a longer period of time, the disc type that Jane spoke of, those run around $30 to $40. You can purchase them at home improvement stores like Lowe's, Home Depot. You can find them online. There's also continuous radon monitors. They're a little bit more expensive, but you can find those as well. And you can also always hire a certified radon measurement professional. You can find those online as well. And you can hire them to come in and test your home for radon. So there's different price points, there's different methods available. And the EPA has a lot of guidance on testing available online.
Yeah, I remember first dealing with these when my mom was selling a house in Lexington about 10-ish years ago. And she was asked by the realtor to do a radon test. And I actually don't remember what the value was, but I think my mom was really confused about like what this is and why she asked to do it. And so it was only within the last couple of years where I circled back around like, hey, remember when you had to do that radon test? This is why you had to do that. So I think that was probably a point where I really started to realize how important this issue is. Because I, as a geologist, I considered myself a geoscientist for the last probably 15 years, even before I graduated high school. I never knew any of this really, any of the importance of what radon is and what it does, or the importance of testing for it. So I'm really motivated after learning about all of that to kind of do my research and share it with the scientific community and the public to try to help figure out how to help reduce lung cancer.
Well, that wraps us up for this episode of Pharmacy Focus Oncology Edition. I want to, as always, thank our audience for supporting us and for tuning into this episode specifically to learn more about this often overlooked health risk. Awareness is the first step, so I encourage you to share what you've learned today and continue the conversation in your own practices and communities. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.